The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. This podcast was recorded between the dates of Friday, January 4th and Sunday, January 6th. It has a margin of error of 2.7%, 19 times out of 20. That's right. There's only 287 days left until Canada's federal election. And do you know what you will hear about every single one of those days?
According to a new poll, Justin Trudeau's Liberals are
the
going through some tough times.
The end of the year poll was conducted
in
by
fact,
a vast
slipping
data.
Polls. The
this,
latest
according to a new poll,
the Liberals. A new poll is looking at Premier Doug Ford. This is a poll.
Polls are valuable, or else they're worthless. They're indicators of public sentiment, or else they're rigged. They are old-fashioned, out-of-date, easily gameable, cherry-picked for easy clickbait, biased, and just plain wrong. Except they're also almost always right. See, anyone who follows politics has a love-hate relationship with polls, especially during an election year. And anyone who doesn't follow politics closely probably doesn't know enough about polling to know which ones are important. So why are polls necessary, especially now? How can we weed through the signal to find the noise? Why, if results are more accurate than ever, are they so derided? And what do you need to know about polls that you won't hear in the breathless reporting about the latest numbers? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. David Coletto is the CEO of Abacus Data, one of Canada's leading polling firms. So, David, how many polls am I going to hear about between now and October 21st?
You're going to hear a lot of polls, and it's not just going to be the horse race polls that tell us, you know, which party's ahead or which is behind, but you're going to get, you know, hundreds of polls that look at issues and what we think of the leaders and how are Canadians feeling about the economy. There's going to be, you know, election years, whether you like it or not, I think you're going to get a lot of polling this year. If you look at the past four or five elections, the number of polls has only gone up. And I think that's going to likely be the case this year as well. We're going to see a lot of polling, in part because I think there's a fascination with polls. I think both media enjoy reporting them. It helps them understand the narrative. I think there's a lot of interest in the consumption of polls. Your listeners, even if they don't want to admit they like polls, they are fascinated by what their neighbors think of things. But I also think we're headed into an election that's likely to be very competitive. And in that kind of environment, you often see more polling firms getting involved and trying to understand the pulse of the country and where things might be going.
Without asking you to speak to Abacus Data in particular or any of your competitors, because I know it is a pretty crowded field, what is in general, when you sort of enter this stage of a race and the polls start getting ratcheted up, what is the signal-to-noise ratio in terms of all the polls that are out there? How many of them are ones that paint a good picture for us versus sort of ones that are flash polls that we should probably not put too much stock in?
Well, I think any one individual poll doesn't really carry much weight, whether it is an Abacus poll or not. And I think what sometimes for a consumer of polls is you get different signals, as you said, that really is noise, that a 1 or 2 point lead for one party over another, or a change of 1 or 2 points from one week to the next, or even a difference of really a picture between two polls doesn't really tell us all that much, because there's margin of error built into all of these surveys. There is a level of imprecision in polls. I think one of the challenges polling firms face is that the expectations of how accurate we can be has gone up. And that means there's an expectation that, you know, if we say that the Liberals are at 37% a few days before the election and they don't get 37%, that's a failure of the polls. So given all of that, I think, you know, my best advice to listeners and consumers of all the polls that are about to be inundated with is to take a step back and say, what are the trends looking like? If you look at 3 or 4 different polls, do we see that the Liberals are going up, or the Conservatives are going up, or are the NDP gaining some momentum, as opposed to what one single poll tells us? Because first of all, again, there's that error built in. But another reason is, as we get closer to the election, the polls should get somewhat more accurate. And the reason is because voters are become more firm in their view.
Right.
1 week to the next, so much happens in politics, so much happens in the world that shifts people's views, that any one snapshot may not actually be an accurate snapshot a week from now. And it's to always remember that we live in a world where Donald Trump says something one day, it becomes the most important story of that day. And the very next day, he says something else that completely changes it. Or a report comes out that says, you know, climate change is far more serious than we ever thought. Or GM closes a plant in Oshawa. And so these stories, the shortness of the news cycle also affects the way that people respond to surveys and the answers that they're giving. And so any one survey really doesn't do justice to the ebbs and flows of public opinion over the course of the next, you know, 10 months that we're going to see leading into the election.
How does the shortness of today's news cycle change the way pollsters conduct their research? Because you used to have a lot longer window to calculate the effect of a given story or an event, right?
Absolutely. Now, it means we have to, it means that the data becomes stale far more quickly, right? And so if we wait 2 or 3 weeks to put out the results of a survey, the world could have completely changed in those 2 or 3 weeks. So it forces us to move more quickly, to do a survey, get in the field, get out of the field quickly, report those results, and preface it by saying this was the snapshot when we took this survey, because we know that a week or two from now, public opinion could shift or the context in which we ask those questions completely changes. So speed becomes more important. I also think the way we interpret the numbers, the way we try to explain changes, right? Everyone, when we see a shift, right, for example, in voter intention, someone says 1 week, you know, 35% of Canadians are going to vote conservative, and then it goes down to say 30 2 weeks later. What caused that change becomes very difficult in a highly fragmented, complicated world. And so it's really important from a pollster's perspective to recognize the limitations of our ability to explain those changes, but simply highlight that there are some shifts, that people aren't always consuming as much news as you know, political junkies or news junkies might. And so when something really hits, when a big story hits, and I think back to 2018 and the Prime Minister going to India, was one of those events that here in the Ottawa bubble, people may not have initially thought that would have an impact. But the way that trip was received back home, you know, the Prime Minister was ridiculed by some comedians, and it moved from just political news into the broader conversations that people were having about, you know, the Prime Minister going to India and putting on all these outfits and maybe not looking as serious as he should. It had a noticeable effect on the results. So there are moments when we can explain big changes, and there are others where it's either the variation that polling, the science of polling, will produce, or a combination of different things that it's hard to pinpoint one specific thing. We try to, or it's our instinct to point to one thing.
Yeah, you want to, right? You want to quantify it by being like, I saw that trending on Twitter, so that's why this polling data is different.
Yeah. It's our human nature to say X causes Y. But in something as complicated as figuring out why someone votes the way that they do, or why they might support one party today or not, it's far more complicated than that. So I think it's really important to just take a step back and see how these things go, and not just assume that because we saw, you know, there was a moment even in the last few weeks where the Liberals had a big lead, and then a week later the polls were showing a really tight race between the Conservatives and the Liberals there right at the end of 2018. And soon after, you know, the Liberals sort of picked up a little bit more support. And so these were momentary lapses that happened that aren't part of the overall trend, or just blips in sort of this. And so it's to get away from the blips and focus on the trend. Now, there are going to be partisans, those who want the Liberals to win or those who want the Conservatives to win, who will grab polls that help
right.
their narrative. In that case, you know, it's understandable why people do it. But if you are somebody who's trying to be objective and to really try to get a sense of what's going on, it's better to look at a number of different polls over a course of a few weeks than one single poll that tells a particular story that you may either like or really dislike.
Up next.
There is this perverse incentive from the pollster's perspective to find that, like, shocking story in the numbers. They need to tell a story. There has to be something interesting.
There's a trader in all of us. Direct invest with Scotia iTrade. Become a new client and you could get up to $1,500 cash or 300 free trades when you open and fund a new account. Conditions apply. See ScotiaiTrade.com for details.
This is a very practical question, but I feel like for the people that aren't tuned into Ottawa or like not looking at the raw numbers, which most of us are not, how can you tell a good poll from a bad poll?
It's not easy. It's not easy because you don't have access to all of the information. One of the things that I think our industry and most of the companies in them are really pushing for transparency, right? I actually think it's not really the responsibility of the individual consumer to know or be able to know what a good poll or a bad poll is. I think, you know, journalists and news organizations that cover polls are really meant to play that role. But
do they do a good job at that role?
I think some do and some don't. And I think it's partly because, I don't want to speak for journalists who have to deal with the pressures of producing as much content as they need to do, but many of them haven't taken a research methods course, right? You know, if a pollster hands them numbers that tell a really interesting story, the conservatives are up 10 points, Andrew Scheer would be prime minister in an election we're held today, that's a front page story that's going to get a lot of clicks, and so you're going to run that story. When you dissect the actual poll sometimes, you can, you know, it's not to say that the pollster, the individual pollster, is meaning to, I actually think and I'm not going to point any fingers, but I think almost all of my colleagues in the industry are not biased, and they're not trying to turn the dials or change the numbers. And so but what's happening is our interpretation of those numbers and our recognition that, again, there's going to be ebbs and flows, there's going to be ups and downs, and that no single poll is better than the others. I think our challenge is making sense of it all. And so as an individual consumer, I think it's why I come back to don't trust a single poll.
What do you do as a pollster when you look at a set of polls and you realize like Abacus is the one way out there? What does that set off in your house?
Well, if a poll comes across my desk where we go in the field, we interview 1,500 people and I get the final results and the results don't really jive with my expectation, I probably won't release it. I'll probably do another survey. I want to verify that what I'm doing or what I'm putting out there is the truth. And like I always, for listeners from Alberta, for example, like I didn't do a lot of polling in the last Alberta election, but it's just a quick history lesson on Alberta. They had the same government, same party in power for over 40 years in Alberta up until 2015. And that's when Rachel Notley and the NDP surprised everybody by winning that election. Imagine you're the pollster who does the very first poll during that election, who gets the results that says the NDP, the Alberta NDP, is leading in Alberta.
Right.
You would say, well, this must be a mistake, right? This can't be. They've never won. They've never really polled higher than 20%. This can't be possible. So my instinct would be, let's do it again. Let's make sure that if we go and get a different sample, we ask the same questions, if we get the same result, then I feel confident that something's happening. And so I think as a pollster, I always want to make sure. I know I have a responsibility to, I know polls can influence people's decisions around what choice they may ultimately make. And so I feel a responsibility to make sure that the research is high quality and that we are doing the very best that we can to explain what other Canadians are thinking about things.
Well, you kind of touched on it earlier. The news cycle is so crazy quick, and the grist for the content mill is always needed, that even the journalists who do have the numbers background and do have the understanding to look at the methodology of a poll don't have time, because the moment's going to be lost and X number of articles need to be published every day. And the outlier polls are, to be fair, the more interesting ones when you put them on social media.
When I get a survey that says nothing's changed, right? I'm going to put it out anyways, but no one picks that up. It's the moment I say as a pollster, like we found in March, where the prime minister's numbers, you know, dropped significantly after his India trip, that poll got picked up. And so there is this perverse incentive from the pollster's perspective to find that like shocking story in the numbers, in the same way that the journalists and the editors want people to read or consume or listen to the content that they're producing. They need to tell a story. There has to be something interesting. That's where I think the whole polls are wrong, we can't trust the polls,
right?
Narrative really builds in, is because the incentives that were built in, and I think these are the incentives in journalism generally, but it I guess feeds into or connects to even the polling world, and so there's this constant pressure to tell a story, to tell something interesting that's controversial or that's going to get people to share the content or click on the link. And again, a headline that says, new poll says nothing's happened.
Yeah, gets nothing.
It's not going to be that effective. Yeah, but in my world as a social scientist, as a pollster, as someone trying to explain what's going on in the public's head around politics, nothing happening is actually really interesting.
Well, and that's where you get that dichotomy too, right? Between like a site like 538.com, which does a ton of data journalism and aggregates polls and all that kind of stuff. And you get the whole polls are wrong narrative from the upsets, like Donald Trump's mm-hmm. victory. And then you get no coverage of the fact that, you know, they nailed the midterm election in the United yeah. States. And yeah, they were not wrong at all, right? But you get what gets coverage is that the polls are wrong, even as they're more right than they've ever been.
So I have got this great story. So I was working, I forget which election, it was one of the provincial elections in the last few years. And it was the day of the election, and I got a call from a journalist, and I won't name names again. And they said, well, we're preparing a story for if the polls are wrong tonight. And so they wanted comment. They wanted to be prepared in case, you know, there was another surprise. Because this had come after, if you remember in Canada, you know, in 2012 and 2013, there was an Alberta election and a BC election that the polls completely got wrong. Like they were absolutely, and we did polling in Alberta, completely wrong. And so there was a lot of reason to be skeptical about how accurate polls could be. But I had a journalist preparing a story to say the polls are wrong. And I ended the interview by saying, are you preparing a story about what if the polls are right? And they said, no, well, we're not doing that, right? And so to your point about, you know, we're also at the same time that I think the media, and I don't mind that the media is addicted to the polling, because I think it helps the narrative. It helps understand where an election's going and how to cover it, right? Like I always say, if you think back to the 2011 election, that was the election that Stephen Harper won a majority, but Jack Layton surprised everybody by becoming official opposition. If the polls midway through that campaign didn't show us that the NDP were gaining strength in Quebec and had leapfrogged the Liberals and really were the alternative to Stephen Harper, if we had no polls in that election to tell us that, the coverage of that election, I think, would have been very different, because people would, and journalists and the public would have still assumed that the Liberals and Michael Ignatieff at the time were the alternative to Stephen Harper, not Jack Layton. And so the polls, while there's lots of people out there who says we should ban polls during elections and they're irresponsible and they change people's opinions, at the end of the day, it's more information that allows a voter to make a choice. And we live in a political system where we don't always vote, unfortunately, for our number one choice, because the way our electoral system works, the candidate who gets the most votes who wins, not the, and if you voted for the Green Party and they never win, some will say that's a lost vote. But there are voters out there who would much rather have, say, a conservative MP than a New Democrat MP. And so if they can vote strategically and if the polls can help them make that choice more effectively, then I think that is a value of polling. And so back to the original question, which was this narrative around the polls missing and the polls failing and the journalists covering only the failures and not the times. Most of the time, the polls are good. The polls are accurate. And even in the moments where we actually think they're wrong, like in the case of the 2016 presidential election in the U.S., the polls were right. Hillary Clinton won 3 percentage points more of the vote than Donald Trump, and that's right. What really the polls were saying. The problem was with how those votes were distributed and how it converted, what he got 46% of the vote into a majority of the Electoral College. That's what was surprising about the outcome, not how people actually ended up voting. I still believe that despite all the technological change that we've gone through, that people have migrated to cell phones, that they no longer answer the phone if they don't know who's calling, that we use increasingly online methodologies to do research. Despite all of the changes that we've seen, polling is still incredibly accurate, in my view. Right? I get on an airplane. Every time I get on that airplane, I think to myself, it is a marvel of human ingenuity that we figured out how to get this massive object of carbon fiber and steel and all these things to take off and land 99.9% of the time. I'm still amazed by that engineering. I'm also amazed by the fact that I could interview 1,000 people randomly in a country like the United States of over 300 million and get a read of what's going to happen within 1 or 2 percentage points of what was the craziest election ever, right? And so I think we often have to take a step back and still be in awe of the science of random sampling and surveys, because we can talk to 1,000 people in Canada and get a good sense of what the 35 million of us are thinking about any particular issue.
We just have to look at more than one of them.
Exactly.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
David Coletto, CEO of Abacus Data. That was the big story brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And you can also visit thebigstorypodcast.ca to hear more of our episodes or tell us what we should cover next. You can hit us up at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to tell us the same thing or just to click a like button. And you can rate us and review us and tell your friends that we are in every podcast app they might want to find us in. Thank you for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.